Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peake here with my guest co-host, Chris Cherniak. Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Lynn.
And well, the science of running and the mechanics that we use to be efficient, injury-free, and, okay, speedy, is a topic near and dear to our first guest. Not only is she a physical therapist, she's a high-level athlete herself, and her resume of triathlons and races lend credibility to her physical therapy practice, and now her presence on a panel of experts. Marlene Hatch joins us in the studio now to talk about a clinic on May 6th at the Park City Medical Center. Marlene, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks, Lynn.
Well, thanks for being here. You've been a physical therapist in the Park City area for a really long time, and you've also been an athlete for a long time, even though you're very young. But What do you think the biggest mistakes are about our running mechanics?
I'm not sure if it's mechanics that are the mistake. I think the biggest mistake with people trying to run is that they want to run too long, too fast, too hard, too much intensity, too much duration without building up. That's where we run into problems.
Okay, that's interesting, because now in the fitness world, we talk more and more about sort of high quality, intensive exercise, shorter, and that you get the same benefits out of that.
Correct. Running programs that are appropriately designed would have the appropriate amount of intensity to increase your speed. But then you also need days of recovery and days of long distance but lower intensity to build up your endurance level. So the key is having all the key components to your program, but also incorporating rest.
All right. And so how do you define rest? I'm sure that's a sliding scale depending on the person and the type of running that's done.
Correct. In this town, people are so active and they do multiple sports. So rest could just be an active day of rest. So an easy run, an easy swim, an easy bike. Whereas for other people who only run or are not very experienced runners, rest might mean 2 days or 3 days off a week.
Wow. And given this town's nature, that's not possible.
That's
a very difficult concept to accept and embrace. You know what, I need to just not do, I need to just take the day off or 2 days off.
Right.
So, okay.
Yeah, interesting. When you do a variety of sports, say you run and you bike and you do CrossFit, say, if you just end up running like once a week and then you're resting or doing your other sports the rest of the week, how does that all play into, you know, how your joints handle running? Is it not enough? Is once a week not enough?
It depends on what your goal is. If you're trying to be a runner and improve your performance at running once a week is definitely not enough. If you're a very active person and running is part of your routine once a week, like CrossFit, then that's appropriate because the runs are usually shorter. They are intense, but the duration is short, so your body can handle that once a week if you're being active the other 6 days a week.
Okay. So coming up on May 6th, which is a week from today, from 6 to 8 p.m. At the Park City Medical Center, is this talk happening right in physical therapy?
Yes, in the physical therapy department.
Okay, you've got a couple of experts. Yourself, Dr. Max Testa, who many of us know. He's a sports performance doctor, and he works within the Wellness Center. He also has a CompuTraining Center out at Kimball Junction. So talk about what he'll address.
So Dr. Testa is going to address all of the topics that relate to sports performance and training. So if people have questions as to how to structure a training program, what they should include in their training program, whether it's a 5K or a 50K, he will give them the key elements to have a successful program.
Okay. And have you seen over the years, he's been around for a long time, you know, I think he's kind of credited with bringing the cycling, you know, wasn't it he who started working with the 7-Eleven team way back when they first came to Europe, and professional cycling didn't really exist here. But he brought them to a high level, or he's credited with that. Is that right?
Yes, I believe that is correct.
Okay. But how much has his, sort of the tenets of sports performance evolved as new science and new research has been developed over the years?
I'm not exactly sure without Max being here to answer that question, but I do know that he is definitely on the cutting edge of the performance side of cycling. And running is not too far off of cycling when you're talking about fueling and training and recovering. And Dr. Testa is definitely an expert in that field, as evidenced by his job with his professional cycling team. And those of you who follow cycling know how well his athletes do.
That's right. And he's the sports doctor for Team BMC, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So he's going to be talking about sports performance. You're going to be discussing running mechanics.
Correct.
So give us a quick overview of what you'll be touching, touching on.
Running the importance of running mechanics, if you really want to be a runner, whether it's just recreational or competitive, the way you use your body, the way you hold your elbows, your hips, your knees, how they swing, how much they move, how much they don't move, is all dependent on your efficiency. So the more efficient you are, the longer you'll be able to run and the less energy you'll have to put forth to run.
And the less risk you put yourself at, the hurt, yes, injuring yourself.
Correct. So our goal is to keep people running longer, well into their later years in life, if they have good mechanics.
And you see lots of bad mechanics?
Not necessarily, but nobody's perfect. So there's always ways to tweak your mechanics to become more efficient or maybe faster.
What are some of the common tweakings that you point out?
Okay, so common things you see when you watch people run, and you can see this in any 5K or 10K or marathon you run if you just watch other people, is usually excessive body movement, arms swinging out to the side, feet flinging out to the side. And those can be quieted down and used to propel you forward rather than move you in the wrong direction.
So you want your upper body to be quieter and your elbows to do what?
Not necessarily quiet, but you want your arms to be moving in a forward motion and not moving in extraneous motions to the side. And so if you use your elbows, if they're bent to the right angle and your arms are swinging forward and back in the plane that you're running in, they will actually help propel you, whereas if they're circumducting and flailing to the side, they might slow you down. Plus, it's fatiguing to other muscles in your body when your body's moving in the opposite direction that you're moving.
Mm-hmm. Is it impossible for some people to correct their running mechanics because, say, they're really, knock-kneed or bow-legged, or their hips are really fixed or tight?
Yes. There are definitely some structural alignment issues that we cannot fix. But people can adapt, so they can choose a different terrain, maybe buy shoes that are better for them to run in, and adapt their technique to work for them.
Okay. So you'll also be joined by Casey Brady, who's a physical therapist, with you there at the Park City Medical Center's physical therapy. Is that what you just call it, the physical therapy department now?
Okay. Yes.
Okay, so Casey Brady, she'll be talking about injury prevention. And this, of course, goes hand in hand with mechanics and performance. And do you know what she'll kind of be overviewing?
Yeah, so Casey's going to go over the common injuries that we see, which are usually knee is probably the biggest one, and then we see a lot of issues with plantar fasciitis or Achilles tendonitis. So she's going to go over some of the common injuries and how to prevent them. But with the population in Park City, the bigger picture is how to stay healthy and run and do all of your other sports and transition from winter to summer. So it won't be completely specific to running, because a lot of that relates to other activities like cross-country skiing or cycling.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And plantar fasciitis is... Yeah, I've had it.
I've had it too. Oh, it's insidious.
What are the typical sources of that? Is it mechanics? Is it footwear? Is it surface that you're running on?
Well, unfortunately, it's a combination. Yeah. I mean, plantar fasciitis is commonly seen in people who stand a lot at work on hard floors. Hmm. But plantar fasciitis is also seen in people who run in the wrong shoe. They run in the wrong surface. They run too far. Same thing could go for a cycling shoe. You know, a shoe that doesn't fit well can flare up an injury, and then it's really hard to get rid of.
Can you get plantar fasciitis from cycling?
You can.
Huh, interesting. You know, and also it's tends to be, you know, what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another. For example, I got plantar fasciitis years ago from wearing Birkenstocks. And I have a friend in town here who has to wear Birkenstocks or he gets plantar fasciitis. So go figure.
Correct. It depends on the foot. Some people with really flat feet get plantar fasciitis, so you treat them differently than somebody who has a really high arch and gets plantar fasciitis. So you have to figure out the source, which is not always the same source, and then try to help them correct that.
Mm. Right. I got mine from, I believe it was the footwear. It was a pair of running shoes that were so comfortable, and they were nice and soft and cushy. I just love it, and they looked great. But I think they were eventually the source of that, and of course, I was also doing a lot of running on concrete sidewalks down West Palm Beach, but that I think those two things were resulted in me getting PF, and that takes weeks,
sometimes,
and again,
months.
That's weeks and weeks of not doing anything,
right?
You've got to stay off of it,
right?
And
hopefully
that's
you
the
can
challenge.
Cycle or swim,
right? But for most part, you can't run.
No,
it's you have to heal.
It's really
its
debilitating.
It is.
Okay, so we'll be talking about that.
Now, one thing that you must see a lot of and questions arising around the minimalist shoe versus a shoe like the Hokas, and I don't know what if you call them maximum shoes and minimum shoes. What do you see surrounding that?
A lot of questions. People need to realize that the Hoka is not for everybody. And the five finger toes are not for everybody. So it depends on your body weight, your mechanics, your efficiency, your orthopedic status. Do you have bad knees already? How much do you run? And you need to pick a shoe that will allow you to run and be comfortable. And that's where people make a mistake because everybody wants to be in the Hoka now, or they want to be.
And the Hoka is?
The Hoka is the new shoe with a lot of support. It kind of has a rocker bottom. It rolls you forward. People think it propels them forward.
They're very cushy, but very light.
Okay.
Very light. And very nice. And the minimal shoes that people try to run in, I don't think a lot of people were meant to run barefoot. So having support is a good thing. It'll help you run longer. If you don't weigh a lot and you have perfect mechanics, you can probably get away with a really light shoe. Or if you're racing track or very short distance, and of course you want a really light trainer, but that's not something you wear all the time when you run.
Mm. Yeah, there
okay.
you go. So how do you know? I mean, can you look at a person or have them, ask a couple questions about their joint health and know whether they're going to be the person that can run marathons until they're 90? That's something I've always wondered as a runner. Like, am I just going to break down my body further, or do I have a body that can handle running mm-hmm. or joints,
Resiliency.
Yeah, that's a hard question. I mean, I think from a good interview with somebody, you can find out what their history has been like. How long have they been running? What kinds of issues have they had? Some people can run forever and never be injured. But I think it comes down to their body, their genetics, how efficient they are, how smart they are, and everybody's different. So hopefully, you don't know the status of someone's knee unless they've been to a physician. Maybe they do have something significant going on, but we don't often know that when they come in to just get a running assessment.
Okay. It's all very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's May 6th. Okay. It's a week from today. It's a free clinic, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Park City Medical Center, just down the hall to the physical therapy department. Panel of experts, Dr. Max Testa, Marlene Hatch, and Casey Brady, who are both physical therapists, and the topics are sports performance, running mechanics, and injury prevention. Anything else we should know?
That's it.
Okay, Marlene, thanks for your time today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll be back in just a moment. We'll move from running and sports into nutritional healing with Sophia Maletti. Stay with us. This is The Mountain Life, only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts with Park City Medical Center, a proud supporter of KPCW and a not-for-profit community hospital. At Park City Medical Center, we offer a host of doctors, all accepting new patients and devoted to providing clinically excellent healthcare in a quality setting where your needs come first. We have OBGYNs, general surgeons, urology, pain management, internal medicine, and family practice doctors, all located on the hospital's campus. To find a physician that's right for you, visit intermountainmedicalgroup.org.
Hi, this is Catherine Simos, president of Grand Valley Bank's Park City Branch, longtime supporter of KPCW. Our team can help you with all of your lending needs, from basic to complex loans. Our loan decisions are made locally. We have two branches in Heber and Midway and one branch in Park City. GrandValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The UPS Store is happy to support Minor Nation Report, Park City High School Sports, and the PCHS Minor Details Show on KPCW. The UPS Store offers a full-service mailbox that provides a real street address, receipt notification, mail holding, forwarding, and package acceptance. 649-1819.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, and our next guest is Sophia Maletti. Sophia focuses on helping clients with health problems by preparing meals that are nutrient-dense, clean, and cater to their condition, whatever that may be. She was first a cook, then noticed people coming to her with a need for not just nourishing foods, but healing foods. Through the process of preparing the food, Sophia coaches her clients on why it's important to make different food choices, use upgraded ingredients, and encourage them to change their eating habits. That is, to eat the kind of food that I would serve them if I cooked, even when it's not around to monitor them. So, Sophia, thank you so much for joining us this morning on The Mountain.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
All right. Well, good morning to you, Sophia. And first of all, I'd like to start. I think it's kind of interesting. You grew up in Park City, and your parents were in the restaurant business. Anyone who's lived here very long knows about the famed Maletti's. So talk a little bit about that and sort of growing up around food and then how you came to enjoy cooking.
Well, it was just kind of it was like home for me. You know, I spent, I would say if you added up all the hours of my youth and even into being a young adult, I really spent more time in that restaurant than I did at school or at home. So that was my school in a lot of ways, you know. And I just learned all the different facets of the industry, and then I learned a lot about the food and preparing food. I actually, it's a little ironic, I baked the bread there for 8 years and now I'm gluten-free. So, and right. I don't prepare gluten for any of my clients. There's no gluten in any of my recipes. So yeah, I just did everything. I tried all the different jobs there, and it was just sort of my launching pad into discovering different kinds of food and cooking in other parts of town.
Right. Okay. And so there was some point at which you were you'd cook for small groups, maybe individuals here and there, and there was must have been some point where you said not necessarily that there was something wrong with what you were doing, but that people wanted more. And what were those first things?
I'm not sure if it was really a need that I saw. It was more an ethical thing that was happening with me. And I wasn't eating, I was eating clean. So I was eating organic food, and I was creating really mindful food for myself. And I was being mindful about what I was eating, and mostly the ingredients, not so much, you know, it was more about upgrading the ingredients. And it started to challenge my ethics a little bit to prepare food that I wouldn't prepare for myself. So those ingredients are more expensive a lot of the times, or, you know, vegetables in this country aren't subsidized like a lot of the processed foods are. So it tends to be more expensive. And so, but I just felt like it was challenging my ethics to prepare anything other than that for clients. And I had a really beautiful life-affirming experience whereby I was cooking for a family. The father had esophageal cancer, and all the ingredients were extremely clean. And I was cooking, kind of catering to his condition, but also you know, he was struggling with his appetite. And so I wanted to make the food really satiating for him and exciting and something that he could look forward to. And it just changed their lives so much that I just decided to go ahead and continue sort of in that with that approach.
So what did that include? What is clean food?
Well, so so no more refined oils. So the oils that I use predominantly are coconut oil, avocado oil, olive oil, first cold pressed olive oil, and then pasture raised butter. And so those are my four main oils, and they're all more expensive than the regular vegetable oil or canola oil or the hydrogenated oils, the highly refined oils that you, I mean, anywhere, any most restaurants, even fine dining restaurants, will use refined oils, and they're not using organic olive oil, you know. So that was another thing. You know, I would love to have a restaurant where I could serve food like that, and I mean, the price point might come up a little bit, but you can feel peace of mind going in to dine and knowing that you're having a meal that was prepared with organic olive oil.
Without maybe naming names, are there restaurants around here or down in Salt Lake that you that kind of fit that definition or come close to it?
It's so hard to maintain a business with all of the overhead. You know, and it's, I know how hard, I had a restaurant, I know how hard it is to run a restaurant. It's just really hard to you know, provide those ingredients a lot of the time. So I don't, you know, right off the top of my head, I can't think of one.
Okay.
To be honest, I know there are several that I've been to around the country and around the world, but right here in Utah, I can't think of any.
Well, it makes me wonder about the purveyors that you use. You know, are there purveyors that say, well, we, you know, now we sell gallons of, you know, cold press, or what is it called?
First cold press organic olive oil.
Exactly. And, you know, it's only $5 more a gallon than,
well,
you know, this other stuff that's adulterated.
You know, someday that'll be available to more of us. But you do see a lot of restaurants in town providing sustainably raised, humanely raised meats, and I really like that. So, and that is pretty common in Park City. I've noticed a lot more restaurants are starting to serve organic vegetables, organic greens, and sustainably raised meats. The oils are a little bit harder, I think.
Right, but you're seeing a shift
in
that direction,
absolutely,
either based on their philosophy and an ethic or customer demand.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. And I think that there's just a movement right now that has a lot of momentum. And I'm really happy to see it growing and to participate in it and be a part of that.
Yeah. So I want to just ask you quickly about oils. And, you know, we hear that there are oils that can withstand and they won't have inflammatory properties if they're not, let's see, how am I saying this? You know, if they're not used
high
with high heat. So which are the oils that we should really avoid of those that you spoke about?
I wouldn't heat olive oil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless
and I do all the time.
Yeah.
Well, what I do, because I like olive oil, so what I'll do a lot of the times is I'll combine a saturated fat with the olive oil and cook the food with another saturated fat, so like a coconut oil or a butter.
Oh, interesting. So what does the saturated fat do to help out the olive oil?
It actually cooks at a higher heat, so it actually kind of balances so that the olive oil doesn't overheat.
And what's happening with the olive oil at high heat?
It's oxidizing. It's, you know, it becomes, like you said, it damaging.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. The other day I was cooking something and we had just recently spoken to someone on this program about not heating olive oil. And, but it was something, I either use olive oil or coconut oil, but it was something I didn't really want to have fully the taste of coconut oil.
Yeah.
And so I threw some olive oil in. So that's okay,
the
huh?
Butter is, pasture raised butter is so, so good for sauteing.
Mm.
And then the other option is to, if you have, all you have is olive oil, just throw in a little water and that'll also help. So,
oh, very interesting. Yeah. See, these are some of the things that you have picked up and learned, and also you're learning now in this big program that you're attending, the uh-huh. Institute for Integrative Nutrition. Uh-huh. So talk a little bit, if you would, about, you say, the vital importance of primary foods. What are those?
So that's a concept from the school, Joshua Rosenthal, who's the founder of the school. It's this in the first module. It's the first thing that they teach us is the importance of primary foods, and they're not foods. They're things like exercise, your relationships with others, your career. I think, you know, your thought patterns are part of that, your sleep habits, you know, your spirituality, and not necessarily like in a religious way, but just having some kind of a connection or some way to connect and feel present. We do that here really by being outside, so that's the same thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and meeting those needs before you turn to upgrading your diet and focusing on supplements or medications or shifts in your diet, really improving those primary foods and focusing on them before you step into the actual diet theory.
So, and that is that to say then that if you don't have all those things aligned, we do not absorb the nutrients and the healing properties of our food.
Yes, and it's sort of. Have you ever heard of Bruce Lipton and his research? And there's a whole branch of science now. It's called behavioral epigenetics. Basically, it's the concept that your vibration and your thought patterns can actually have physical effects on your body and the way your cells behave.
Right.
So I'm sure you have met, or maybe the listeners have met, people who eat really well and exercise and are very mindful about their bodies, but are still depressed or still, you know, unhappy in their lives.
Stressed. So
you're stressed. Yeah.
Right.
So, and a lot of that is just balancing, you know, but balancing stress through these primary foods, and then using diet to even improve more, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like exercise, like you say, exercise, relationships, your career, your spirituality, all as elements of nutrition. Those are all separate forms of nutrition.
They are forms of nutrition.
Yeah, emotional nutrition, as well as physical nutrition, spiritual nutrition.
Exactly. So basically finding a balance where you meet all of those needs. Mm-hmm. And it's tricky. It's not, you know, there's balancing is hard. Yeah. So.
I want to talk a little bit about liquids. You know, we always talk, when we talk about food, it's always kind of like, well, this solid-based foods. But I have friends who eat the right foods, and like salads, and they make sure they get their, you know, nuts and their proteins and their carbs, and then they wash it down with diet sodas or something, or some form of liquid that has got high fructose corn syrup in it.
Yeah.
And to me, that, I don't think we spend enough time learning that the liquids we take in can be just as damaging.
Absolutely. Actually, a glass of orange juice has the same amount of sugar as a Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and most people don't
and
know
not
that.
The fiber, because the fiber's been stripped away. Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes if you just really need a Coca-Cola, you know, if that's going to make your heart sing, if that's part of meeting your primary foods, that's one thing. But drinking Coke and sugary beverages all the time.
And the diet.
The diet ones are far worse.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I'll admit, I love a Coke with ice sometimes. Mm-hmm. I probably have maybe, I would say, 6 to 10 Cokes a year. You know, and I love them.
Sure.
But I would never drink a Diet Coke because of the aspartame and all of the the fake sugars. It's
mention all of the artificial coloring.
Just
the
read
artificial
the labels.
Flavoring.
It's just
a chemistry experiment.
Yeah.
That's a carbonated chemistry experiment.
Yeah.
That's sold as something that is supposed to be health, you know, nutritional for you, i.e. the diet aspect of it.
Yeah. Well, that's a marketing ploy. I think most of us know that by now.
Yeah, we ought to.
Yeah.
But yet it's also very, the addictive aspect of it. Uh-huh. And that's why this one friend, he drank all these Diet Cokes.
Yeah.
Because he was in effect, he didn't want anything else.
Mm-hmm.
There was no other alternative. So anyway.
I think the alternative is water. Water is the best beverage out there. And
yeah.
if you're going to change one thing about your diet and lifestyle, it's drink more water.
Really? That's
yes.
it. Start there.
I think that's the first thing everyone should do is drink more water. Especially, and I was telling my mom this the other day, older people, and I don't know what the age, the cutoff is, but older people, their thirst mechanism actually stops functioning.
Yeah.
So even though you're not thirsty, doesn't mean you shouldn't be drinking water. So, you know, and I'm constantly telling her to hydrate. You know, she's 64, I think.
Right.
And it just doesn't, you know, it's just, you don't get thirsty as much.
That's right. Interesting. That's the first time I've heard that. So just make it a habit. And it is all about habits and developing good ones. I want to ask you about cholesterol and something you call K2.
Yeah.
What
so
is that?
K2 is it's like my favorite vitamin to study right now. It's so exciting. it's very little known, and there's a lot of new research around K2. Basically, K2 is the vitamin that escorts calcium around the body. And so just like there are other proteins that are escorts, just like insulin is an escort for glucose, right?
Mm-hmm.
So insulin takes glucose out of the bloodstream and escorts it into the cell. So there are different molecules in the body that are actually like taxi cabs or whatever for transporting different nutrients around the body. And K2 is actually responsible for taking calcium where it needs to go. And without it, it builds up in our arteries.
So calcium does.
Calcium will actually harden arteries without K2 to drive it around where it needs to go. So, and there's this book that I just love, and I feel like everybody should read it. It's called Vitamin K2 and the Calcium Paradox.
Hmm.
And it just describes how important this vitamin is.
And where do we get it?
So you can get it in, so the vegetarian version of K2 is only found in fermented vegetables.
Oh, right.
There's something that happens in the fermentation process whereby K2 is synthesized, and then also in pasture-raised dairy products. So, and it doesn't, you don't see it in factory-farmed dairy. You only see it in dairy that's pasture-raised. So
why would that be?
Actually, cows that eat grass for some reason produce K2 in their milk. And I don't know. Let's find out. That'd be interesting to explore. But cows that eat grain do not produce K2.
Okay.
So it'd be, I don't know. Like I said, that'd be interesting to find out.
Yet another reason to eat grass-fed beef. Or so.
Yeah,
well,
and
many other reasons. There's another one.
Multiple reasons, countless reasons, yeah.
Okay.
So, this little special vitamin is in pasture-raised butter.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly the two cheeses that you find it the most are Gouda and Brie, and also in grass-fed beef.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Also take it as a supplement, though. So if you're taking a calcium supplement and you're taking a D supplement and you're not eating those things regularly, then you should be also taking a K2 supplement.
I'm wondering, are you familiar with Dave Asprey and the Bulletproof Coffee?
Of course, yes. Love
okay, is this why he says that you use, is it clarified butter? Is that the same thing as pasture?
So clarified butter is just butter without the water.
So okay.
It's ghee.
Okay.
Basically, ghee is the same thing as clarified butter.
All right. But he tells you specifically to use the certain kind of butter.
I don't know why he uses the clarified butter, but I'm sure he uses the pasture-raised butter. I can't imagine that he wouldn't.
I think you're right. And maybe that's why.
Yeah.
I don't know. Quickly, we just have a couple minutes left, but I have to ask you about gut health and probiotics.
Extremely important. I think that Right now, the Western diet is deficient in probiotics just because before it was really common for us to be eating probiotic-rich foods because the practice was to ferment foods so that they wouldn't spoil, mm-hmm. right? And then when refrigeration came around, the probiotic foods kind of went away. The fermented foods, the sauerkraut, the kimchi, the yogurt, so all of those things were things that were actually developed to avoid spoilage. And so we were getting those probiotics in our diets just by default. And now it's something that we actually need to be more mindful of consuming because probiotics, I mean, they do countless things for us. Really, it's, you know, there's even new research connecting probiotics to, you know, joyfulness and mm-hmm. Just being happy.
Again, that nutrition, the well-rounded emotional and spiritual nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it just helps us digest our food. So there's this biodynamic environment happening in our guts. And when it's out of balance, when we don't have enough probiotics to help in the digestion process, then we get things like leaky gut syndrome and
good.
Multitude of problems. So if it's hard to eat your probiotics and you're not liking the kimchi or the sauerkraut, I would rather eat it. So I don't want to take supplements. I'd rather eat as much of my food as I can. Mm-hmm. So if you don't like the sauerkraut, if you don't like the kombucha, yogurt, all of those probiotic-rich foods, just take a probiotic supplement.
Mm. Okay. But this was another thing. You know how there are these trends in health that the slick marketers pick up on? You know, probiotics seem to be one of them. And then you start to question, is this real? Is this, you know, am I just buying into this because it sounds healthy? But you're saying probiotics... It's
absolutely
really what
necessary.
We need.
Absolutely necessary. And if you have doubts whether something is trending because it's just trending and it's a marketing ploy, then just do some of your own research or use your own body as a laboratory. You know, mm-hmm. you know, start taking a probiotic and see how it makes you feel. Mm-hmm. You know, start eating healthier fats and see how that makes you feel, and just play around with some of this food, and. Like I said, your body is going to tell you eventually.
Okay,
Sophia, how can people get in touch with you?
The website is sophiamiletti.com. It's sophiamiletti.com. And that's all my information is there.
Okay.
Sounds great. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it so much.
It's nice to have a Park City native who's grown up on Main Street here in Miletti's Restaurant. And just to see kind of the transformation you've made and the evolution that you've made along with, you know, concerns about health and, mm-hmm. and healing.
Yeah, I just kind of picked up on, like I said, the movement and
yes.
it's caring, it's building. So.
And when you graduate from this program at the mm-hmm. Institute for Integrative Nutrition, mm-hmm. will you come back and then fill us in? Because
sure.
I didn't even ask you about Ayurvedic diet.
Yeah, I would love to come back.
Which I'd love to hear more about.
Okay. Yes, I graduate in October, so I come back anytime. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right,
Sophia Miletti. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment with Technical Director of the Tour of Utah, Todd Hegeman. He's announcing the route and the next state that the Tour of Utah will go into. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Guy Raz, host of the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Join me for the TED Radio Hour Sunday mornings at 10 right here on KPCW. Each episode takes you on a journey through the world of ideas with riveting speakers from the renowned TED stage. The show is the fastest growing program in public radio history, and it's on Sundays at 10 a.m. on 91.9 and 88.1 FM. KPCW.
Brought to you in part by Park City Film Studios and Crandall Capital.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with my guest co-host, Chris Cherniak. Of This Green Earth. Well, we were just speaking with Sophia Maletti about her nutritional healing, an interesting topic. And now, well, let's go into biking. Why not? Because once we get healthy from our nutritional healing,
right,
we can be out there on the tour of Utah. Well, our final guest is Todd Hageman. He's the technical director for the Tour of Utah, which, as you know, is a seven-stage cycling race that winds its way through Utah. And this year, through a little corner of Idaho. It boasts close to 52,000 feet of elevation gain across 712 miles. And I think you can guess why it's called America's Toughest Stage Race. And Todd Hageman joins us now in the studio to talk about this year's route. Good morning to you, Todd.
Hey, good morning, guys.
I always love it when you come on each year and talk about the route and the new towns that get to host the Tour of Utah, which always promises to be a festive event and just something new for a lot of towns around the state.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. That's actually one of the joys I take in this job is working with these small communities. This is typically, for some of these small towns like it was in Camas last year, one of the biggest events that they've ever held in their town. And we have the same thing this year with little towns like Tremont. And they're super excited. Even up in Logan, it's not a small town, but this is a really big event for a lot of these towns.
Right. So it looks like the whole tour is shifting to northern Utah. Mm-hmm. And the last couple of years, you've had it in, you know, as far south as what, Cedar City or
Yeah.
So why the change?
You know, there are some communities that expressed interest, and we haven't been to that part of the state. And so as much as we love southern Utah, and I'm sure that we'll be back, it was time to visit some new locations. And going up to Cache County and around Bear Lake and up in Box Elder County, there are some areas that we wouldn't be able to hit if we were spending half of the week down south. So we're more concentrated up in northern Utah this year for sure.
So at almost 52,000 feet of elevation gain, total elevation gain, how does that compare to other international races?
You know, as far in North America, it's by far the most climbing that you have. More than Tour of California, more than the U.S. Pro Challenge or the Tour of Colorado. In Europe, you do have some of the longer stage races definitely will exceed that, but they do it in more days. But when you come to a 7-day stage race, you know, I haven't really done the math on the other races, but we got to be right up there.
Yeah.
As far as the most elevation gain, and quite honestly, it's not really by design. But when we're drawing up the courses, we're trying to find places to go, and you're trying to include the beauty of the state and highlight these communities. It would be almost impossible not to make this America's Toughest Stage Race.
We have a few mountains in this state, yeah. Mm-hmm. So in terms of doing that, as your goal is to highlight the state and sort of the how much this race markets Utah around the world, talk a little bit about that and the exposure that it gets.
Yeah, you bet. So we work closely with, we have a lot of great partners. Two of our biggest are the Utah Office of Tourism, as well as Utah Sports Commission. And so one of the goals is to highlight, as you mentioned, the state of Utah to the world, to the nation. And so, again, this year we will be televised live on the Fox Sport Networks. Actually, it will be on FS1 for the first part of the week, and then we'll be moving to FS2 and the FSN networks over the weekend, which is great. Fox Sports Network doesn't have a huge presence in Utah because we don't have Major League Baseball. I'm from Detroit. When I go back to the Midwest, every single TV is on Fox because of the baseball connection.
Right.
So because that's a great question I get all the time. Why aren't we on NBC Sports like the Tour or like the Tour of California? And my explanation is just that it actually has a better reach to who we're going out for. Our core cyclists will find us on whatever TV channel we're on. But when we're trying to broadcast to the most people, Fox Sports does a great job. And also, again, we've been picked up by Eurosport for the last couple of years. So Eurosport 2, Eurosport Australia actually was picked us up last year, and I believe Asia. And it's interesting when you look at our viewership on the countries that we're seeing in, I think, over 150 countries last year, that our top markets mirror the top markets for the Utah Office of Tourism, which so it makes it a great platform to market the state.
Okay.
So how many racers are we talking? How many teams?
Yeah, we've announced 13 teams. We still are working on 3 teams. Hopefully we'll have those announced soon. And we're looking right around 130 riders. So we have 16 of the top teams in the country and the world.
Yeah. Mm.
Some of those highlights, probably the same teams that produce winners over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and so we have, coming back, we do have Cannondale, which has the 2-time winner, Tom Danielson.
Mm-hmm.
Trek is coming back, as well as BMC. Then we have a lot of different continental teams coming in. We've got a team from Colombia. It's always fun to have the Colombians. They always do really well out here.
Because mm-hmm. They know mountains.
They know mountains, yeah. And they know high altitude, and mm-hmm. they don't need the time to adjust. Some of the European teams, it takes them a few days to get going because of the adjustment to the altitude.
Right, mm-hmm. Okay. So new this year, it starts in Logan.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's going to be fun. It's going to be a great day. It's going to be a long day. They're going over 200K, start and finish in Logan, and going up Logan Canyon, and we'll be going around Bear Lake clockwise and then back down Logan Canyon. So as you can imagine, I'm really looking forward to those helicopter photos, the
Bear
Peloton
Lake,
next to the turquoise water of Bear Lake. Mm-hmm. Again, going back to being a postcard for the state. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a great day. And then we do have women's event too.
Right.
So there will be a women's criterium, and that's part of the national calendar this year. So it is all the top women will be in Logan and Ogden on day 2 for a criterium right downtown.
Okay. And so that's something new this year, right?
Well, we had one race last year at Miller Motorsports Park. We had a circuit race for the women, but it wasn't on the national calendar. This year it's on the national calendar. They'll be battling it out for $20,000.
Oh, wow. So the nation's top women racers.
They will be, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Then we, as you say, Tremonton and then down to Ogden. And kind of new this year, we'll be seeing the race in this area by Thursday with this Soldier Hollow and Heber Valley. That's new.
Yeah, it is. I'm really excited about that day. That's going to be a fun, being back on roads that we know. Mm-hmm. And the folks in Wasatch County and Soldier Hollow have been great. It's going to be a big day up there because we do have a start and a finish at the lodge there. They'll be heading out and heading up US 40 up to Daniel Summit, up past Strawberry Reservoir, and then heading over State Route 208 over to Hanna and Tabiona. So we've got a sprint line right there at the Hanna Hotel and the Hanna Cafe.
Oh, that's
great. For anyone that's ever ridden or taken their motorcycles over there. Then up and over Wolf Creek Pass, then down the pass and a finish again at Soldier Hollow. So it's 125 miles. It's going to be a big day for those guys.
That is a big day. What a great route that will be. Wow. And then the next day, Friday, you're down in Salt Lake City with that downtown circuit. And then Saturday, again, this will be the day when you also have the amateur or the citizens ride.
The Ultimate Challenge.
Yeah. And so that'll start from the Rio Grande Depot this year.
Yeah, that's a change for the Saturday. We're going to
more elevation.
a little bit more elevation and starting it with the farmer's market. So we'll have a really big crowd for the start right down at the Rio Grande. It's going to be a busy day. Then they'll be heading up Emigration Canyon back into Summit County. And then, as you mentioned, up Browns Canyon into Park City. Then it really gets heated. Then they go up the Mine Road. Up to Guardsman's, back down Big Cottonwood Canyon, then over to Snowbird. And if anyone went up there, we had great crowds. I saw a lot of familiar faces up on Guardsman's Pass. Yeah. And so each year that just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's quite a party up there.
Yeah, really fun. And then finally, the last stage will be the same that we know, where they come back up from Midway, up that 18% grade part of it anyway.
Yeah.
And then finish right here on Main Street.
Yeah, why mess with success?
It's been such a great stage.
I think this is our third straight year of that stage. So again, we'll be starting with the start and finish on Lower Main Street, heading out to Camas and up and over Wolf Creek Ranches into Wasatch County, and then up in Empire Pass. And have you guys done that yet? Have you tried it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Chris does it daily.
Not daily.
Yeah, I mean,
a couple times a week.
It is brutal, and you talk to the riders, and they'll say it is. If it's definitely the hardest climb in any race in North America,
is it?
And it rivals anything in Europe. It's deeper than Alpe d'Huez.
And it's long.
It's a high elevation finish too. Again.
Yeah. But also, it's not just the climb. If you remember last year, I think the most excited thing, if you go back to the coverage and watch Cadel Evans, the former world champion and Tour de France winner, I mean, he was off the leading group coming down, and he caught those guys in the mine road coming down, that descent.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Such excitement. Well, Todd Hageman, thank you so much for joining us. I have just one final question. You're the technical director, mm-hmm. so you're driving around. You go ahead of the peloton. Right?
I drive. I'm anywhere from a quarter of a mile to a mile in front of the race, coordinating with. So I have a lot of radios in my car. So what we do is we coordinate with our race command, our PD, our communications. So it's kind of the hub of communications as the race is going down the road.
Okay. And, you know, I wonder if you have room in your car for a media person from Park City, like a local media person. I'm going to ask them now.
Someone who knows biking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's easy.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm gonna hold you to that, Todd.
it's lonely in there all day. It's a long day.
Okay, I'm there. All right. Well, thanks, and we'll see you in August.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
It's now 10 o'clock. We'll be back after these words.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Hideout Canyon, Master Plan Community on the Lake. Info at hideoutcanyon.com. Long Reimer Weiniger Beppler, Estate Planning, Family Law. LRW-law.com. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Thanks to Chris Cherniak for joining me today, and to our underwriters, the doctors at Park City Specialty Clinic, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa, Grand Valley Bank, and Heber Valley Bank.